all this other contentious stuff.
Yes, please.
Has it been recorded for months?
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Okay. First card, Aeon.
Which corresponds to judgment, correct?
No.
Yeah.
It does?
20.
Yeah.
Card 20. Next card, death.
Heavy card.
Third card, the fool.
Wow.
Okay.
Did you shuffle the deck?
Yes, I did. I always do.
Okay.
Fourth card, abundance, three of cups.
And of course, you're going from right to left?
Yeah.
And I never can remember the elemental associations. The first one is...
Yod, fire, water, fire. Air, and earth.
Why can't I remember that?
I don't know. It's so simple.
I know that air is number four, but I can't remember the...
No, earth is number four.
That's what I meant, earth. I was writing air when I said it, but I meant
okay.
Earth.
The fifth card is pleasure, the six of cups.
And that's the hidden motivation.
Right. The sixth card is indolence. Eight of cups.
Wow, cups.
Arc of influence. Number seven. Ten of wands, oppression. Number eight, the lovers. And number nine, the emperor.
My God, look at all these majors. Holy cow.
Wow.
Yeah, that's unusual.
Well, more than half the cards are majors. And then all we have is cups and wands.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of steam going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Fire and water.
Well, the six of cups is sun in Scorpio, death in Scorpio, and eight of cups, I believe, is Mercury in Scorpio. And emperor is Aries. Those are all, Scorpio and Aries are ruled by Mars.
Yeah.
And Aeon is fire. So, yeah, a lot of steam. A lot of fire-water interaction.
Mm.
This is not a restful reading. Just looking at these cards, I'm thinking, my God, this is big shake-up time here, you know? And in a way, I guess it kind of is in the series, too. So,
One of the things we're going to be we're discussing the mathematical and the basis of imagination and language, which is actually one of the areas which I tend to be a little contentious about. But that's the topic that's discussed in the in this chapter.
Hmm.
So it is a major magical chapter. So it's also it sort of deals with what we could call the substance of imagination. And he's basically arguing that Hod is where the substance of imagination takes place. So this
in
is
glory. On the tree.
Uh-huh. So we and that's so as the stuff comes out after we've read the chapter and begin discussing it, we might see one of the reasons why we're so inundated with major arcana.
Mm.
And we're particularly inundated with what I guess is the beginning and the end. With Aeon and death, and then with the fool, the lovers, the emperor. So,
and even a 10 thrown into the mix there, too.
Yeah. The oppression, right? Wow.
Now we're on number 15, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, this is general.
A lot of transformative energy here.
And it is also interesting that that given that the future outcome, indolences and the arc of influence for the future outcome has the lovers, that the next chapter's name is Love and the Law.
Mm. And I think lovers is the contrapositive if you use justice as eight.
You said love and law, Paul. We've got lovers and emperor, so there's both right there. So.
Lovers and emperor and the Ten of Wands.
Yeah.
So it's chapter 3 in our booklet.
Okay, now we have to do... I'm usually, you know, Barbara.
You want to be Barbara Promethea?
Yeah.
This is Sophie Promethea.
I'll play
unless you want somebody else to do it.
I'll play the male roles.
Unless someone else is more up than me, because I did not sleep last night and I will be staggering through it, I will gladly give over Barbara to anyone who wants to do it today.
Oh, I just have started thinking of you as Barbara.
Yes.
I just hope I don't look like that, you know.
No.
I'm a little bit that way, but
you do that. So, Paul, you're doing all the male roles, or
I'll do the male roles.
Thank you, Paul. That's
really and I'll be I'll start out as old Mr. Jelly. Jelly roll.
The jelly roll. Now, where the jelly roll came from?
Jellyhead. He's just, you know, what it is you know, we wipe out a supervillain, another one wants to take his place.
Oh, I see. So
the law of balance in comic book land.
Okay, so Mr. Jelly over there is a new manifestation of evil.
Yes.
And for Grace Stacia Promethea, do we have someone to read?
Val, you want to be there? It just comes in at the end and the beginning.
Yeah, I can do that. Is that all one character?
Stacia Promethea.
And then Grace. Okay. Okay.
That's where she merges with all three.
Grace, do you want to give Sophie Promethea a try?
Who are you talking to?
Joy.
Oh, I thought you were.
No, I know, but you've only been here a little bit. It would be fun maybe for you to try Sophie Promethea.
Oh, I got to do it last time.
All right.
Okay, let's get started. So we're Makut. Boy, this weather sure hot, ain't it? I'm Jellyhead, by the way. Everybody stay calm. Nobody's going to get hurt. The body's customized elastigel, incidentally controlled from a remote distance. I got the idea from the big elastic wig out last New Year's. I figure if the painted doll's really dead this time, New York's got a science villain opening, you know? Anyway, as Mr. Guard, there's been kind enough to demonstrate bullets don't hurt me, okay? Now, me, on the other hand, I can't stop Mr. Guard from breathing. Ain't that right, Mr. Guard? He's nodding. Now, if you'll all just... pop take. Boy, it sure is hot.
I feel like somebody needs to go da 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 da.
Dave, you okay? Oh, good.
That was incredible. And slicing him up's okay because he was just elastigel.
Elastigel, you say? Oh. Who's doing Stacia?
Stacia.
That's Val, right?
Okay. Elastigel, you say? Sorry, darling. I can't have heard that part. Oh, look at him slithering around in slices of silly man. a look at him, shall we? Up you. Come, sweetie.
You're that new science heroine, aren't you? You're Promethea.
No, darling. I'm that old science heroine, Promethea. Now, as for you or whatever was working you, let's get a few things straight. Firstly, I'm running things now, and just between us, I have a teensy bit of a temper. As for that other Promethea, that nice one, I'm afraid she's elsewhere. Don't.
Odd.
Well, here we are. Where are we?
You know, all these decorations, they're Egyptian hieroglyphics and things. I guess that telling stories with pictures is the first kind of written language?
Yeah, probably. That's why Prometheus mostly appeared in comic books this last century. Gods used to be in tapestries, but now they're in strips.
This is where the sun path from the lunar kingdom terminates. We're in the mercurial realm of language, magic, and intellect. Its Hebrew name is Hod. That means splendor.
Why splendor specifically?
Barbara, that's really a clever play of meanings. You know, I just thought language, it shapes our whole consciousness, how we put ideas together, even our concepts of time. Before we had command of language, we couldn't record events in the past.
Yeah, well, an eloquent never forgets.
Well, I suppose communication is how minds reveal themselves. Language gives shape to the splendors of the intellect. Hey, Barbara, do you feel, I don't know, sort of peppier? It's like smarter, but kind of more playful, too.
Yeah, my thoughts feel all like fizzy or something. That looks like the station exit over there.
Ah, right. And elephants make trunk calls, which returns us to communications. Geez, Barbara, where are all these puns and word connections coming from? My head's sort of racing.
Mine too. It's, oh, wow.
Wow. That must be one of those neural pathways you hear about.
Yeah, and I guess those are logic gates. This atmosphere, it's all tingly and exciting. What kind of metallic... What's that kind of metallic scent?
I think it's a perfume called Storax. It's related to the Sephira.
Sephira, that means number, right? So the symbol means this is like Sephira 8?
Yes. But this is combined with the planetary symbol of Mercury. Funny how the two shapes are so similar. Coincidence, I guess.
So, are those flowers significant?
This must be moly, a flower that Hermes gave Odysseus to help against Circe's magic. It's actually the mandrake plant. See the root?
Holy moly!
The very same. And right in front of you, that's the magic square 8.
I knew that. It's the 8 times 8 grid with all the rows and columns adding to, let's see, 260.
It's from the magic square of 8 sacred to Mercury that evolved chess or mandrake play, according to Thomas Hyde's 1964 chess history. God, how did I know that?
I don't know, frankly. I'm getting, like, real heavy deja vu about this path. Haven't we come over this rise before?
There it is again, deja vu. You mentioned that Mobius strip thing before. I'm sure. How does it work again?
Let me see. Okay. This path...
I think it needs to go across rather than...
Yeah, go across and then start turning it upside down.
Follow the strip, not the pieces.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, across.
Okay, that's me then.
I think the next one...
Barbara says, haven't we come over this rise before? And then... Sophie says, and down
and
the
now
slope.
The slope. So I don't take
slope.
The horizontal at all?
Later. It'll come back around.
All right. And down the slope? Yes, I think we have. And there's that weird sound, like people talking down beneath your feet.
Well, wait.
And then down to... Yeah, you know.
No, I think it's just across. And then we go.
No, if you follow them on the Mobius,
okay.
Follow them.
Yeah, I think that's. Yeah. It'll be hard, but we can do that.
Yeah. So the next.
I'll just
one
need some.
So
help
now, on. Wait. Okay, I'm on the Mobius strip. I'm on panel 3.
Mm-hmm.
I'm following
yeah,
them. So then it's yeah. You know, Sophie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just follow.
Why do I feel? Or
wait. Hey, you know,
yeah.
Sophie, all this math and language and reason. Why do you feel there's something behind it that's so intricate? It's insane. Then follow. I guess, Cynthia.
Why do I feel there's something intricate? This path, some sort of
No, down.
Oh, I see. I go this way. I guess it's where genius, which I evidently don't have, changed into madness. So
I don't know where. Where did you guys go?
I'm following the
Mobius strip.
Okay.
So I guess it's where genius.
I guess it's where genius shades into madness. Say, is it getting darker ahead?
Okay, now it's.
Now you're upside down.
Now I'm upside down.
Yeah, the stars are. Oh, what?
That's
oh,
good.
Now you're upside down? Oh,
you're
no.
Right, I think you said.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's me. Okay,
that's
you're right. All the stars are out. There's nothing wrong with this path. How it twists from night to day. Then I'm upright.
Right.
Yay! The stars are out, and I still hear voices beneath our feet saying the same thing. And Sophie, look there. We're ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
Then turn around.
It says, if the path snakes through time as well as space, see? It gets brighter down this slope.
Damn, right, it is. No, you go.
So we are. We're right. It is some sort of time loop.
Damn, right it is. We're even back there behind ourselves. And I mean a loop in space. I can understand.
Or is that up the slope? Either way, it's day again. But you're right, this path's certainly peculiar.
Just, okay.
But a loop. Yeah.
Okay. But the loop through time, that's like infinity. That means it goes on forever. Just look at the bridge up ahead. That's us, Sophie. That's us 5 minutes ago. Not just peculiar, okay? Insane, I mean. Okay, then we go all the way.
Okay. Down to the third panel on the
right.
Top.
This pad's some sort of time loop. It has to be.
Oh. You go upside down?
Yeah. Go ahead. Upside down in the center.
Well, I guess the Mobius strip is like the infinity symbol or the figure eight.
There, let me see. There. Hear that? The voice beneath us said Mobius strip, right? When you did before you mentioned the affinity symbol.
God, Barbara, you're right. That's us walking on the bridge's underside. This must be a Mobius strip. Yeah, I heard them. Now it's getting brighter up ahead again. You know, Barbara, infinity is a scary idea. I mean, how do we get off this thing?
There it is again. Deja vu. You mentioned that Mobius strip thing before. I'm sure. How does it work again? Oh, God. Okay, let's go off the stage. That was work.
I'm going to throw up. I have vertigo, guys.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Okay, Paul, are you the ether people or whatever?
Getting, like, really heavy deja vu about this path. Haven't we come over this rise before?
Whoa!
Barbara, off the path. We have to get off the path now.
And down the slope, yes, yes, I think we have.
Whoa, whoa, geez, I feel nauseous. How many times did we go around that damn thing? Once a million times?
I'm not sure. Sure, assuming there is one.
I'm not sure, then on the bottom.
Yeah, come on.
Come on, we better...
Come on, we'd better find some safer routes.
Okay.
Who's who? Let's see. Is this old Barbara?
No, that's you.
Okay.
Sure.
No, Sophie. Sophie's got the notched bubbles. Barbara for the smooth.
Okay.
I feel like I'm a director here. No.
That's okay.
Barbara? Wait. Yeah, Barbara, that's you.
Barbara? Oh. Sure, assuming there is one, you know, that expression, straight eight, that's got to be sarcastic. This place is anything but straight.
Well, it's straight in the sense of truthful. This sphere is about communicating, communications. Truth is its specific virtue. Come on, let's take this bridge.
Will it hold us? This silvery metal, it flows and changes like liquid. What is it?
I don't know. I'm suddenly getting the notion that it's what thoughts and ideas are made from, like ideal plasm or something. We'd better keep moving.
Yeah, I guess so, especially since the bridge behind us ain't there anymore.
See, it is like some sort of thought stuff. The way it shifts and changes, shapes, melts, the way to nothing. It seems to lead toward that citadel ahead.
Which is all made from the same liquid filigree goop, this ideoplasm, or whatever. The intricacy, it's like I said, whatever lives here has to be insane, don't you think, Sophie?
Well, the Promethea idea. I had you in what? The 5th century? I must say, you've taken your time getting here. Actually, I was just enjoying a round of mandrake play with the boys. Won't you join us?
Okay.
There now. I think introductions are in order. Though there's seldom order in introductions. You know Toth, of course, though not in his non-syncretic form. That noisy beast with him is his ape, the Sinos fellas. I apologize for my Sinophilus. He and the trickster Hanuman currently have a disagreement, and I expected some monkey. this gentleman on the eight-legged horse, horse magic god Wotan, while this mischievous little chap is the boy Mercury.
Gods, real gods. Oh, Sophie, they're so sweet. I feel like I'm going to cry or something.
I know, it's like they've always been mankind's very best friends, I guess. Old friends.
Here, come on up. Our play is at an interesting stage. You might learn something. So, what finally brings you to Hod? Call me thrice greatest Hermes when you answer, by the way.
Is he serious?
Thrice great Hermes, my friend Barbara searches for her departed husband, Stephen Shelley. He was both a writer and occultist. We thought we might find him here.
Hey, everything's made from quicksilver stuff.
Naturally, that's where all the forms seen in the lower spheres of dream and matter has its origin. All perceivable form is made from this quicksilver stuff. We call it language.
Hey, this is wrong. I mean, there's only one knight left in play. How come the game continues? It's impossible.
Oh, well, that's where being omnipotent comes in useful. Dear me, just look at those poor little knights. He's been going around this board all alone, trying not to land on some square twice. You can see the order of his moves.
Ah! Sophie, we're back on the magic square thing.
Yeah, but there's a different magic square. The numbers are in a different order.
Oh, God. Sophie, we're outside again. If we were back on the Mobius thing, I'll scream.
Oh, dear. Nobody wants that. Much better if we continue with our stroll. May I, ladies?
Wait, 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 wait a minute. We weren't having a stroll. We were on this chessboard in a chamber with you and some other gods.
Were we? Well, that doesn't matter here. It's all a story, isn't it? It's all fiction, all language. It can change like Quicksilver.
But this isn't fiction. This is our real life.
Ha ha ha. Real life. Now there's a fiction for you. What's it made from? Memory? Impression? A sequence of pictures? A scattering of half-recalled words? Disjointed hieroglyphic comic strips unwinding our recollection? Language. To perceive form, even the form or shape of your own lives, from us dress it in language. Language is the stuff of form. Mathematics, for example, is a language. Consider the forms it produces. This magic square of eight is called the Knights of Four. Connect its numbers in sequence, and you produce the magic line of eight. Do you see? Mathematics is a language, a human invention, a fiction, and yet it creates such elegant form. It creates splendor. It creates truth.
So everything's made from language. We're made of language, even you?
Oh, especially me. How could humans perceive gods, abstract essences, without clothing them in imagery, stories, pictures, or picture stories for that matter?
Picture stories?
Oh, you know, hieroglyphics, face paintings, whatever. Did you think I meant besides what could be more appropriate than for a language god to manifest through the original pictographic form of language?
So what are you saying?
What am I saying? I'm saying some fictions might have a real god hiding beneath the surface of the page. I'm saying some fictions might be alive.
Go ahead, Paul.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Who were you looking at? There's nothing behind us.
Oh, I have my jests. Please pay them no attention. Now, let us head over here, shall we? There's people I'd like you to meet. Our game is paused, my fellows. One called Three Great Approaches in Company of Maidens. Ooh, well, Crawley, I must say, I don't fancy yours much. While splendid, knowing your tastes, I imagine mine would be the younger of these divinely escorted ladies. Thrice noble? One, how may we serve thee? Doctor, this fair lady seeks her husband, both a scribe and a sorcerer. as he passed this way, I wonder? Name's
Barbara. His name's Shelley. Stephen Shelley.
Now, who's this?
Yank, wasn't he? Wrote cartoon strips. I think I remember him passing through here. He went on, though.
Wait a second. Crowley, you're Aleister Crowley.
Why, yes, I know.
I just wanted to say I love your work, the Top Deck. It's just incredible.
Well, thank you. I wonder, would it distress you greatly if I kissed your behind? Ignore him, them. I'm Austin.
Would, Barbara, come on. We're getting out of here. You heard the guy say Steve had gone on.
Yeah, but Austin here seen him. Could he show us where Steve went?
Splendid idea, Mr. Spar here. Can guide you out of Hod. Although I hope you'll visit again soon. Promethea is one of my fondest creations, you know.
Which way do we go?
That way. Travel well, women. The Sphere of the Magicians wishes you a safe passage.
Route 27.
Like anybody's passage is safe with that bald creep around?
Oh, that's just my way, Crawley's way. Sometimes even I can't stand the chap. He does a lot of it to irritate Dee, of course.
That old English guy? That was Dr. John Dee, right? I've seen engravings. And your name sounded familiar.
I'm Austin Spar, or at least I'm part of him that's in this realm. That was a bloody good artist. Better magician, mind you.
I've heard of you. Jack, my magician friend, said I shouldn't try understanding your work until I knew more.
Hey, what's that over there? I mean, those people are falling. Shouldn't we help them?
There's no point, Barbara, my lovely. There's always falling. That's the lightning struck tower. It's the symbol of the 27th pound. It's every tower man or woman ever built. A building, a marriage, a career. That was meant to reach heaven. The lightning is what teaches us humility. For me, it was when Jerry bombed my Brixton studio during the blitz. Hell of a mess. Left me paralyzed down my right side. Couldn't bloody draw, could I?
What did you do?
Well, darling, what do you think I did? Half paralyzed or not, I was still the best bloody magician in London. And bugger Crawley if he says otherwise. Oh, no. On second thoughts, don't. Just to spite him. Anyway, I thought myself how to draw perfectly using my left hand, at which point my right side recovered completely.
Wow, that's amazing. I'd really like to see some of your work.
I'd like to show it to you. And where better than here on the path between Mercury and Venus, between the 8 and the 7, between intellect and passion. Perhaps your friend could run on ahead. Doesn't she have somewhere she should be?
She's coming on to me. Oh, that's so funny.
And suddenly we're back here. Holy God, will you look at this? It's the entire Evil Eight, and they've only existed for like 2 weeks. Stan's right. There's Jellyhead 2, Queen Bitch, El Nino, Erogenous Zoe. Damn, there's Sandman and Clytemnestra. They've all crawled out of New York's woodwork since the doll's last appearance. Yeah, so how come we didn't get a chance to pound these science creeps? Good question. From where I hear, our sandal sporting science rival's been active recently, after laying low since the Elastigel incident last New Year. You're wrong, Bob. I have a kind of psychic rapport with Promethea, and this kind of aggression just isn't her style. Yeah, well, whoever's doing this, the question is, what are they going to do next?
Well, darlings, I thought that first I might tidy you civic defenders out of the way, which would give me a nice clear run at killing this beastly possessed mayor, don't you think? So, who wants to go first?
Ooh. Boy, is that butchy macho. Boy, Stacia, you know, kept on saying that Sophie was a lesbo, but I don't know. Here we got.
Yeah.
I'm wondering. Wow.
What did they say about projection? You project.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. To other people?
Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Golly.
Okay.
Well, this was a dizzying chapter.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. When we were on the Mobius strip,
when I was reading this myself, I'm like, where the hell am I? You know, I'm trying to follow. Yeah.
What was nice about it is even if you fell out of sequence, the way it was written is that it was always
right.
Crossing over on itself anyway.
That's right. Yeah. So that was kind of the point, I think, you know.
We could have read it three or four different ways.
Yeah.
Man, it's been really dizzy.
No boy.
I think Alan Moore was just brilliant.
Yes.
His artists and the, I mean,
yeah.
Enormous. And thank you, Mary Beth. It was very helpful. You helped me through
it. Well, I didn't mean to sound so bossy, but I got to tell you, I spent almost an hour on these two pages trying to figure out the sequence of them, and I thought I finally got it right, but I'm not even sure.
No, I think you did. And it was noticing little things like the way the Promethea Sophie was notched,
right.
The bubble was notched. Mm-hmm. You know, it made it much smoother. For me, but this is very interesting.
I dream this. Every time I have a session, sometimes I wind up having the most vivid dreams because of the colors and everything.
That's the artist in you, Johanna.
Yes. Wow. It really sets me off to the point of, you know, wow.
Yeah.
Well, look at the way that, and very true, look at the way just on what you're saying. The pyramids, the two pyramids,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. The landscape, there's like a reflection or an underground,
mm-hmm.
or in the sky. In other words, the sky is below the earth kind of thing. It's just completely.
Well, it's also the octagon. Two pyramids, when they're put together, becomes a diamond shape. Or
I am almost sure. I mean, I will testify that if Alan Moore was sitting here in on this, he would say, "Well, these are visions from his own path working."
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. And something else on the Mobius strip page, notice we have the sun and the moon.
Moon, right. Mm-hmm.
At the top, the moon's at the bottom. So, I mean, yeah, it's very up and down and all around, and I feel like I'm going to heave here.
I love it. I love it.
He's a true magician because he's manifested Promethea. And every time when any human being reads this, they're getting a kind of, well, through his eyes, a sense of his own path working.
Yeah. But also, at the same time, a very personal sense of their own path working.
I think that takes a bit more.
I'll speak for myself. I will tell you that I think the Mobius strip idea combined with the whole Mercury and the thoughts coming and dissolving and coming and dissolving, I think it's very much, as much as a statement can be made, very a statement of everything.
Of language and imagination, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's everything and nothing at all. All
I agree.
Time.
I agree with you there.
Yeah.
I think that the emphasis I would make is, rather than emphasizing language as what we speak, which I think is a highly stylized version, think of language in the broadest sense of communication.
Yes, I agree.
So that it includes a visual
And he made a point of mathematics as well.
Yes.
Yes. Well, that's, yeah, but the, yeah, the whole thing is that it all, and it's all fictive. One of the things he's saying there is mathematics. Of course, there's Platonists in mathematics tend to think that mathematical forms are archetypes, therefore that they have an independent reality of the human mind. And whereas
but language does not.
Well, I'm just pointing a couple of things out.
Okay.
Other people claim otherwise. This is around specifically the foundation of mathematical theory. That, in other words, mathematics is independent of the human mind. That the archetypes number is would be true even if we were silicon beings.
Mm. So, in other words, the tree falling in the forest does make a sound even if there's nobody
right.
there to hear it.
Right. Exactly. And also, I think that's the correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the capitalistic worldview.
That's the Platonic worldview.
But it's also the capitalist.
They very clearly state here, and this is where Moore is a postmodern.
Okay.
He claims that it's mind dependent. It's not the true archetypes, though.
That math is mind dependent. That everything is mind dependent.
Yeah. And speaking of fiction. I do have to bring this up. There's a little movie that's just reached cable called The Invention of Lying.
Oh, isn't it wonderful?
The invention
of Lying?
Oh, my God, it's great.
It's a comedy.
Well, sort of.
Yeah, it's an allegorical comedy. But
yeah.
It's quite fun. However, I'm so deeply imbued in the interpenetration of truth and fiction that I knew that level of culture could not exist in a species that could not lie.
Yeah.
Mm.
In other words, science could not exist, religion could not exist, the whole variety.
Mm-hmm.
Because
even
at
language
some,
would not exist.
Well, at some point, you're right, because at some point, somebody has to state something that isn't yet true in order to bring it into being.
Well, you cannot have a theorem unless you have a falsity.
Right. But if you can kind of shed some of that depth of philosophy there, and you will enjoy the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I enjoyed the movie.
It's a movie.
Okay.
It's a comedy. It's definitely worth seeing. And
it's a little poignant in parts, but it is basically a comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I think that the wisdom of it, from my point of view, was that the guy, he could have lied to her.
Yeah.
Such a way as to get her to say, you know, you told me you love me.
Yeah.
Before she declared her love for him independently for herself. And if he had done that, he would have, he would have convinced her, because you couldn't imagine anybody lying.
That's right.
And
you know what, for me, was the highlight of the movie, I mean, I know it's just prosaic, but I loved it, the pizza boxes. And for those of you who haven't seen it, I will not go any further than that.
Don't spoil it for us. Yeah, it's on cable now.
It's on cable, HBO.
HBO. Okay, great. I'll be able to get it. Okay, I want to ask some. I want to mention something also. There is a book that is one of my all-time favorites. It's a small book. It's called by G.K. Chesterton, called The Man Who Was Thursday.
Oh, wonderful book.
I'm glad you like that. It's one of my all-time favorites. I did an illustration. Yeah, I did an illustration for it.
To mention Chesterton when we've been discussing Crowley, so to speak.
They hated each other. Boy, did they hate each other.
Yeah, isn't that something, right? But,
well, it's sort of like the schoolyard prig versus the schoolyard bully. Yeah.
But it's a wonderful, short little story, but it is filled with some gems.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look for it because I do like G.K. Chesterton generally.
You know.
He can be very preachy, but every once in a while he just comes up with a...
Well, the Mobius
sticker,
strip,
you know?
this illustration of the Mobius strip, I had to do in a class assignment. I had to, to make an illustration portfolio, I had to do a picture from... We had to read the book and do a series of pictures. So there's one that totally reminded me of The Man Who Was Thursday, was this Mobius strip illustration.
Okay. I'll have to look that up.
Mm-hmm. You did or that one?
I did. Yeah, it's on my website.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's called anxiety, I think. I think it's
something I wanted to mention too. Back we were talking about, well, you know, language being the, does it exist, you know, beyond human consciousness, or, you know, going back to the Judeo-Christian tradition,
mm-hmm.
What is the very beginning of, I think it's the New Testament. This shows how bad I am.
In the beginning was the Word.
In the beginning was the Word. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So language was there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea was there. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, language is vibration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is a logos in that sense does mean primordial reason also.
Uh-huh.
And or order.
Uh-huh.
You know, and of course that would be mathematics represents an approach to order, understanding how order works,
uh-huh.
The inside and outside of order.
You know,
of course, being tarot readers, we're all immersed in order and chaos and coincidence, which takes us back actually to our reading, which is
yes, it does.
Because we have a reading which statistically is pretty rare out of 9 cards that we have so many.
Yeah, 5 of them.
I just wanted to make one comment. I didn't know Austin Spa was a chubby chaser.
Was a what?
Chubby chaser.
Chubby chaser.
I don't know.
Maybe it was just Barbara.
He just liked women approaching his own age. He didn't like them skinny young things.
Very much. Okay.
Skinny young things probably made him feel inadequate or something, you know. So.
Half of him was paralyzed, yeah.
Okay. Well, other than that, a little levity, let's get on to, do we want to look at any of the illustrations, or do we go to the reading now?
Let's do the reading. It's so fascinating.
Let's look at the reading, but let's not abandon the illustration.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
must say, one comment I want to make about the illustrations before we move mm-hmm. on is just that, before I forget, is that I am so fascinated with the way the artist depicted mm-hmm. Mercury. It's
yes.
beautiful.
Isn't it?
It's stunningly and beautiful.
I know I'm going to wind up having dreams again. It's almost like a flashing tablet. It's
it
works for me like a flashing tablet.
That's what I was going to say, Johanna, that I bet it's the flashing colors that are triggering that for you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I purposely did with the Sacred Rose. It was to do like the flashing colors, too, when you put out the deck. It's meant to get you into an altered state. But, okay, so let's go on with the reading. So what do we take from Aeon being in the, in fire?
In fire. Well, also that we begin with Hod, that we're going from the lunar into the, from the lunar to the solar.
Well, and the Aeon is a path we didn't take, because the Aeon goes from Malkut directly to Hod, but we went via Yesod, so we went up Hod and then Resh.
But he specifically states we're on the path of the Tower.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's the path that goes over to Venus.
That's later.
Okay.
This is where it's the beginning of the story.
Yeah, it is interesting that was an alternative. How does this work? I mean, since I didn't read the full series, do we go through all the paths or we just do the middle pillar?
He does, I think if I remember right, he does them all.
No.
Well, it looks like we're doing the lightning flash.
Oh, he's doing the lightning?
The lightning
flash. It looks like it's the lightning.
Okay.
It's only sort of one side of it.
Okay. Yeah, because there's not enough books to do.
Down the middle and across both sides.
Yeah, so definitely it goes, starts and then it zigzags to the sephira. So we're doing the sephira, basically.
Yes,
we're skipping all the in-between paths. Okay, gotcha.
Not all of them, but he doesn't skip all of them. But
we come across the tower, which we did.
You have to use some of them to get from here.
But not all the paths are trod, just some.
Okay.
I do agree that I think it was the lightning.
I'll be right back.
So we have Aeon Death as the. And Aeon Death and the Fool, right? As a trinity of major arcana, which is an. The judgment and the death and the fool kind of represents a reversed death kind of issue. You know, because Anne is often considered, the judgment, which is the resurrection of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have here then following the resurrection, we have death.
Mm-hmm.
Moving into water, which is like an undersea journey. And also this could be the quicksilver aspects of Mercury. And then moving even more into more quicksilver aspects of the fool's air. And then all of a sudden, this trinity of things becomes the Three of Cups on Earth as abundance. So it's almost like saying that in a way that those three initial cards as Major Arcana almost represent the gods, the thrice great Hermes, in various guises, the guise of the messenger, which could be also the fool, the guy of Aeon, which is another messenger as the angel Gabriel,
like a calling,
and also death as a messenger, usually one that we prefer. Would wait, bide his time.
You know what I find really interesting, too, in these three cards in these particular positions, is that each of these cards is associated with the element in whose position it falls. Aeon is associated with fire, also sometimes with water, but often with fire. Death is a water card. Fool is an air card. And here they are in fire, water, and air. So it's very tidy.
And then the Three of Cups, representing the earth here, as in the elemental spread, also that represents usually celebration, a completion, a fullness of emotional understanding. It's sort of like a reverse journey of a reversal of death.
Mm-hmm.
To understand the meaning of the earth and of life.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting now, the Three of Cups, that is Mercury in Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's if you were to do, it's almost like you need to transform your emotions to think anew, which will give you abundance.
Mm-hmm. And communicate those emotions.
Yes.
I think I wrote something down wrong here. The number six is the Eight of Cups, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I've written it down Three of Cups twice. I was wondering how that happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that the hidden motivation is pleasure, too. I mean,
Well, that's a doubling, too. Now, so that's just another
feature
that you have, this doubling taking place of the six.
But what I'm getting, that most people find this formula very difficult. They can't transform their emotions, and they can't think anew.
Yeah.
When you have stubborn readings, you know what? When they're not working on themselves spiritually, you usually get this type of person. I want what I want when I want it, you know, because I deserve it. And you go,
maybe not. It's like they are stuck on their own Mobius
strip. Yes, exactly. They're stuck on their own Mobius strip. And
yeah, I guess that's kind of, if we see the Eight of Cups as a, let me look at that one. I have to take a look at the image on that one.
It's got a lot of flow on it, as I recall.
Yeah, I want to look.
Or I may be confusing it with...
Well, there's three empty cups.
Mm-hmm.
And only flowing with four cups. No, there's four empty cups and...
And flowing with four?
Only four. Half of it's not...
Yeah, the cups are overflowing and four of the cups are overflowing and four are not.
Mm-hmm. So, it's in we call right away it's called shortened force. Like you're not all together. That no matter what, you always have to renew your emotions and your mind to be on the right path.
Is following the Izhad structure through water, the breaking of hope, the phase of decline.
If you notice, the Fool card sort of has his own Mobius strip going with a saber or a sword. What is that? This butterfly?
Yeah, what is that? He looks like a ribbon dancer, you know?
I know. It's like, I don't really care for this Fool. He's scary.
There's a touch of evil there that I don't like.
Robin Hood or Robin Goodfellow.
Robin Goodfellow, yeah. I don't trust him. I really don't. This fool I don't trust.
Evidently, neither does the tiger. He's biting his thigh.
No one should trust the Fool. Mm-hmm. I mean, trusting the Fool is...
Yeah, right.
Isn't it interesting?
Even in other decks, I wouldn't trust the Fool.
But isn't it interesting that one of the keywords often assigned to the Fool is trust? I mean, not necessarily that you should trust him, but that he trusts.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, his step is going to be supported.
That's the cosmic Fool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right, Johanna. This does look a little bit like like somebody is trying to unravel a Mobius strip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed that too when you mentioned it. I looked at that image.
And it's around his neck.
Around his neck, it's all over. He's a mess over there.
Yeah.
If he's trying to work through it.
Yeah, it's like he's trying to break his way out of it. Or
mm-hmm.
This looks like a rope trick gone terribly wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
The Six of Cups as a joy of life and inner harmony, and in some ways, you almost pair it up there with the Lovers, sort of as above, so below.
You can't remain static. That's what basically I'm getting from this. In order to have abundance in your life and pleasure, you need to transform and move on and move on. Transform.
Yes,
it's a continuous process.
Yes, you cannot stop. You have to keep moving. Wow.
And our nation is going through that, too.
Oh, yeah. Everybody wants to stop where it's comfortable, but, you know, it's not comfortable once you've been there for too long. So, it's kind of a
bat. And it can turn around and bite you.
Yeah.
Exactly. We got comfortable in our consumerism.
Yep.
And now we have no skills. There was a very interesting discussion last night on Coast to Coast where this man said we lost our ability to problem solve because we have not funded NASA.
Well, that's not an entirely incorrect.
That's one of the shibboleths of Coast to Coast. Not everybody, not all people who are... intellects and scientists or whatever you want to say, would agree with that statement that NASA is the end and be all.
But you
don't say it's part of the problem. However, that said, there are a lot of, I don't want to make it sound more mysterious than it is, but obviously much goes on in NASA that we don't know about.
Sure.
And those things may very well.
Well, it's a problem solving. It's cultivating like a think tank of problem solving, as they did in Apollo 13 when they fired.
Well,
we don't invest in pure research.
No.
We don't invest in creativity, which is where it all starts.
And I actually think that NASA, the not funding of NASA, is as much a result of the lack of our inventiveness and ability to problem solve as it is a cause of it. NASA is a victim of us not wanting to problem solve anymore.
There are two wonderful articles. One is in Newsweek, one is in the Huffington Post, on how America is losing its edge, both adults and children, in terms of being able to do all this. But they, like me, that's why I'm bringing them up, agree that it's because we're not emphasizing creative thinking, creative play, creative thought.
We're emphasizing conformity as much as possible.
Yeah.
When I went to Sedona, which, you know, Arizona is a John McCain state, you know, he said, when I went, and I went on a vacation to Sedona, and, you know, you talk to people, and they, and one of the funny things was my husband says, find a Home Depot, and if it's right, if the weather's good, we'll move out there. And so, sure enough, I found a Home Depot right at the entrance of the crossroads between 17, which runs from Phoenix to Sedona, and then across. And I was laughing, and the guy told me that everyone, they couldn't find people to work there.
Why?
All meth addicts.
I'm sorry?
All meth addicts.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
They could not, they had to bring people from out of state.
It was a cheap drug, in the area, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Could you imagine not being able to have a workforce in Sedona, Arizona?
In Sedona?
Yeah.
I think you would miss your ocean very quickly.
Yeah. The Red Rocks are very beautiful, though.
The place is, to put it mildly, a little flaky.
Yeah, it is. You can get flaky very easily.
I mean, the whole energy vortex, vortexes, as they say, they do not say vortices in Sedona. Mm-hmm. It's vortexes. They actually emphasize that. It kind of lends itself to flakes. I mean, you know, not that I'm not a flake. I think it would be very interesting to go there and to experience that, but it draws that kind of people, and I can see that kind of people, just like back in the 60s, you know, the intellectuals, the people who wanted to evolve were the ones that were into the LSD and, you know, and the, what's the word?
But where are we going with
drugs?
But getting back to what Johanna said, the overreaching statement of that is, if there are meth heads in Sedona, dear Lord, where else and what else is going on
other
places?
Right.
Exactly.
Let's look at the story. Of Promethea and where she's going. So we've had a couple of stories where she's progressing along. She's found Barbara, and they are together going off looking for things together.
Well, the next chapter should be Yassad, Paul, don't you think? If we were in Hod this time, next time, unless we're going to do more of Hod.
It progresses.
It does. An ocean of emotion is plunged into. A memory of motherhood is explored. Yes. So,
I'm here back at the Ark of Influence here.
Okay.
Only I wanted to mention something. And it really says, what do you call, your choices, which is the Lovers. It may be very difficult to make them, the Oppression card. Oppression and choices and how you choose, the responsibility leads to rulership, which is the Emperor. So
Maybe Bob is going to have some very difficult choices to make.
Those who read ahead?
Her relationship with Steve.
I'm
just throwing it out based on your reading. And I have read ahead.
Yeah, I know.
it's
does it ring true, the reading, though? The author of
yes.
Okay.
It does ring true, but not necessarily for the reason I said.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, something I just noticed looking at the Six of Cups card. The cups almost look like lanterns.
Yeah.
I wonder if pleasure has something to do with enlightenment, you know. Or
well, for Crowley, definitely.
For knowing, you know. Yeah, I see lanterns here.
It looks like they're traveling also on wires.
Yeah. Yes, you're right.
Like ball bearings.
That's the point. People learn. People, children, adults, human beings learn through pleasure. Pain is remembered more, ironically, but we learn much more easily through pleasure.
Sure.
So it's
the
paradox.
Pleasure principle. Yeah. You know, we want to do more of what gives us pleasure. I mean, it's just, it's ingrained. It's built in.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to digress.
That's okay.
I just happened to notice that. They look like lanterns.
Now, Eight of Cups is called Abandoned Success in the Rider-Waite.
Right.
So there is a discernment thing going on here. What to keep and what not to keep.
Right.
Right. Right.
What is success? What isn't success?
Exactly.
And you know something I always think of when I look at the Rider-Waite Eight of Cups? I mean, the pattern of cups behind him as he moves away is not complete. There's a hole in it. And sometimes we do have to give up on things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to know when it's time to say, I've done all I can do here, regardless of what the outcome was.
Right.
Or that by continuing, you can do real damage to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always think there's a Tennessee Williams quote that always comes to mind for me when I see the Rider-Waite Eight of Cups, and that's, there is a time for departure even when there is no certain place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
The Eight of Cups to me is a card of sometimes just accepting what it is and moving on.
Yeah.
You know, you can't make it all right. So I think that's even indicated a little bit in the Toss deck. As you said, only four of the cups are flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Four of them are not.
Yeah.
Sometimes the magic works and sometimes it doesn't. You know?
Yeah. And maybe you don't, you know, when you ask the magic, you have to be willing to take the consequences of the Mobius strip.
Right.
Because things keep flowing.
Yeah.
I'd like to recommend Lev Grossman's Magicians, which was recommended to me by Johanna. I am three-fourths through it.
And I'm sorry.
The Magicians.
It's a not...
Lev Grossman.
L-E-V Grossman.
Okay.
And the book is a coming-of-age book, actually, but I think it will be of interest to everyone here because of reading Promethea and because of who we are and what we do. Not that they're direct about Tarot at all. However, he does make magic and being a magician into a rather sad state of affairs. Almost as if the characters have to leave this world in order to understand and master the craft of magic. And by leaving it, it's very hard to return to it.
Mm.
And it's a coming-of-age story because they go to a special college for magicians. And anyone who's been to college knows you can't go home again. I mean, you do have that kind of sense if you've been away. At any rate, I would be very curious what others think of the book and the take on magic given Alan Moore and the Toff deck, et cetera, et cetera. They do a different kind of magic. It's much, it's more involved with science sometimes, and but it'll hit home.
Mm.
Okay.
It's not as good as, I think, his first book, Codex, but it's more applicable to what we're doing.
Okay. I'm looking at the Eight of Cups card very closely, and I just noticed for the very first time that the handles on the cups, some of them are broken, some of them are whole.
Oh,
only on
right.
One cup, the one
yes.
at the bottom, are both handles whole, which kind of indicates to me maybe that's the crux of the
It
whole.
Was quite a party.
Yeah.
I guess it was, wasn't it? Woo! Skull!
Well, it shows that the usefulness of the emotions or whatever, they serve their purpose. Now you can't
right.
use the cups anymore.
Right.
You know, they're broken.
Yep.
It's like holding on to an old piece of ceramic.
I mean, look at this. Some of these cups are chipped around.
Right.
Ears,
mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah.
Exactly. Wow. That was a great observation.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny how you can look at these cards for years and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, there it is. You know, it's something you never saw before.
And look at the Six of Cups. Inside the cups, some of them, it's, I don't know if that's a snake, they all hold something. But or is it the reflection? I don't know. Are they crystals? Are these crystal
like,
goblets?
Yeah.
I don't know. This is weird.
That's,
I don't know.
That's an interesting way you express it, because the Seven of Cups
uh-huh.
holds in the Rider-Waite tradition.
Right. Each holds something. Yeah.
Right.
You know what these are in these cups on the six, Johanna? They're Mobius strips.
Yes. Don't they look like? It's interesting. And Abundance all have good stuff in their cups.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which are really lotuses. They're true lotus. Lotus? I don't know. Lotus.
The other way that the knowledge that we're being shown now is a knowledge that needs to be grasped. You could say intuitively.
Mm.
You know, in a sort of spontaneous manner. I think that's one of the things that seems to be brought home with this. Needs to be you know. I think I mentioned it's going to come up graphically in several more chapters, that when I had one vision of ascending into the archetypal realms, one of the things that happened for me, and it's going to come up again, is this archetypes as bubbles, which
huh.
we saw...
you had mentioned that before.
In the chapter, yeah. We saw it last week in the chapter. A little less than this one, but it'll also come up in the next chapter, that there's going to be this bubble thing. It's going to be related to memory and deep memory.
Mm-hmm.
And this is memory, not so much as our personal experiences memory, but rather... memory is sort of the structure of reality. You know, reality has its own order. You know.
You know, I have to say, having read this a few years ago, and that was one kind of experience, reading it through, and
yeah.
now reading it chapter by chapter in a group is a totally different experience. I have to honestly say, I don't think it's a failure of memory, mentioning it, but that the experience is just totally different. And when we're done, or in between, if you get a chance to read the whole series,
it
flows, it's different.
Yeah, this is definitely at a level where it can that one would profit from repeated readings of the comic in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of subtleties in it in terms of character and in terms of symbolism.
Also, Cynthia, you mentioned, how long ago was it that you read?
A couple of years, a few years ago.
But I mean, you've changed too in that time.
That's
so
true.
I mean, different
That's
things
true.
Are going to look different to you.
That's very true.
But this is like his great work, Alan Moore, in a magical sense.
I think so.
Not his best known, but I think you're right. I think it is his.
Because all magicians are supposed to create a magnum opus. Is that it, the term?
Yeah. Yep.
Or they go strive for the great work.
Uh-huh.
And not that it means that you are, doesn't mean that you become famous for it. That's an added attraction. But your life is supposed to be dedicated to something that is artistic or beyond.
It's a legacy thing.
It's a legacy thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is interesting to think of, though, in terms of what is his greatest magical work versus what is his greatest work. Because, I mean, certainly there could be some very strong arguments for other things besides Promethea, like Watchmen, for one
mm-hmm,
thing. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people would say probably one of his best. But, and I'm not a super comic book freak, so I'm not going to make the argument. But what I think is interesting and has been interesting to me for many years, and I don't have any firm thoughts on the matter, is the idea of how our magical practice influences our creative abilities. And I think that has a lot to do with this whole chapter that we're talking about.
Totally agree with you.
And does our... And is it the active force of the kind of more mercurial air-based kind of masculine force that allows us to create our best work, or is it the receptive feminine force that allows us to create our best work?
Or a good balance of the two.
Well, yeah.
At different times
which
you need
Mercury,
one or the other.
Hmm?
At different times in the stage of the work, you need different
well,
aspects.
Yeah, of course you do. I mean, that's, I think that's pretty much the creative process, especially
exactly.
Like the yod-heh-vav-heh creative process.
Right.
So, but I think my point is that, and I think whoever said that you need both, I think that that's not just in the creative, let me see if I can formulate this. I mean, clearly, Cynthia, what you said is absolutely right. But I think there's a deeper level to it, because I think what I'm trying to get at is in Promethea, he's being more directive. He's trying to express a particular idea about Kabbalah and about magic and about the magical path. Whereas, I mean, would you say that in The Watchmen, his main goal was to express a particular idea, or do you think it was a little more?
Oh, it's
maybe he was. I don't know.
It's totally more didactic.
Right.
Promethea.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
It's practically. It's like.
Yeah, it's a lesson.
I brought it up to do as the book group is because I felt it's a whole. It's just such a wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful way to access tarot and magic and the Tree of Life mm-hmm. and. But it is didactic. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
Well, and I guess my hypothesis that I'm going on right now is that the more didactic or the more directed work is usually not as good.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're right.
And yet it still has importance, obviously.
That's
I don't know, I think it's
right.
Curious.
Yeah, that's like a shibboleth of art, yeah. That is true.
Well, interesting, the critical reception of this, of Promethea, the artwork was particularly, won a lot of awards for the artwork, and the artwork integrates some of these ideas, and there's some that are coming up in the, where he tries to, you know, deal with, you know, pure white, pure light, and where the thing is all white and gold, you know, and you know that particularly was found stunning in its attempt at conceptualization. But the regular cartoon people, you know, they not enough conflict for them in these initiatory cycle that we've entered. I think the initiatory cycle is interesting, but of course we're doing it because we're looking at the Tarot and the generation of the Tarot and the Tree of Life and all these occult themes that we deal with anyway. So seeing how it's worked out here, you know, gives us an appreciation on that level. So we don't need the conflict, though. You know, you can, but there still is enough. There is still a creative conflict that's going on. I think it gets interiorized here. I think that's the thing I'm probably trying to get us to maybe focus on when I say let's look at the story. What is Sophie Promethea in particular? What is she learning from this?
Well, the point I want to make is something that someone, I think, could easily miss, is that they're on this journey in Hod specifically for the reason within the story to find Steve, to find Barbara's husband. So we're actually talking about relationship in terms of creativity, language, et cetera, et cetera. It's part of the journey of relationships as well as other things. But the relationship is emphasized in the story.
And we might want to
love relationship.
We also might want to emphasize that it's Steve and Shelley.
And the poet.
Yeah, well, there's intimations that it's related to the poet or to Mary Shelley.
Right.
Even though, but one of the things will happen is that Barbara is going to find Steve, and they are going to separate, and Sophia continues her journey and her return on her own, so... part of the in the whole arc of the story is around Sophia, and it's so around the issue of wisdom. What is wisdom learning from this? And yes, a part of the wisdom she's learning from this that is what are the ways that you travel through the tree is in relationship or in search of relationship, and she's in relationship with Barbara. And it's an interesting relationship because if you notice, most of her interaction with Barbara before the transformations into Promethea were utterly antagonistic. You know, she says, you know, "Get lost, get out of here."
Not antagonistic on Sophie's part, but on Barbara's part, yes.
Barbara's part, right? And then, of course, then Barbara is incapacitated for chapters where she's in and out of things. When she's in things, she's mostly in things. And as a incarnation of Promethea, more or less, either there or she's in her deathbed. You know, so it's an interesting.
You know, it's interesting too. Now that you mention that Sophie, either as herself or as Promethea, shows so much concern and even tenderness towards Barbara, even though Barbara actually rebuffed her, you know, in the very beginning. So
I think it's a mother-daughter relationship on a higher level than her own mother.
Because her own mother is worthless. So yeah.
Yeah, I think those are themes that are there. There is this mother, there is this surrogate mother aspect. And of course, Barbara never had children of her own,
so they still need each other.
But you bring up the point of Sophie being wisdom and wisdom moving up the tree.
Yeah.
And here we have wisdom being mothered. And of course, wisdom comes into the world unmothered.
Yeah. And then of course we also have her.
Well, it's kind of a Hokmah-Bina dichotomy.
Could you elaborate?
Hokmah is the second sphere, and that's wisdom.
Right.
Bina's the third one, which is understanding, but it's also associated with the maternal energy. It's a gestational type of womb-like energy.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it just...
That's
just interest. I don't know. It just struck me as interesting to describe wisdom as being mothered when when wisdom and a maternal energy are very close on the tree and very interactive, related, very related on the tree.
So you don't feel that that's an appropriate statement?
No, I do. I think it's interesting.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We should also do a nod to Stacia and her
and her Amazonian the Amazonian Promethea.
She's totally amazing because she's going through her entire initiation right on the tree.
Yeah,
I mean she's having, it's almost like path working blind.
It's baptism by fire almost.
Are you talking about Stacia? My position with Stacia is that that's partly what she is. She is stasis. She is refusing to grow up.
I love that, Paul.
Refusing to grow up. Whereas Sophie, you know, sort of wants to grow up and wants to know and is curious and has this sort of this thirst. Whereas, you know, Stacia is, you know, is afraid to grow up. You know, she's sarcastic. She refuses to take anything seriously. She's down on knowledge. You know, she likes force. You know.
Yeah, but she knows how to have fun, doesn't she?
You know?
she knows how to have fun.
But you know, so and so it's a kind of alter ego for Sophie. They mm-hmm. they're close because they're opposites. Mm-hmm. You know,
they fill up each other's gaps. Yeah.
You know, and I'm sensitive to that kind of relationship. Having when I was an adolescent, I had a relationship that was very like that with a guy. He and I were very close, but we were utterly oppositional in terms of what we were. I still have friends that are like that. I mean, I still have friends who for all intents and purposes, are utterly oppositional to me. But there's no reason I should be friends with these people.
Oh, opposites attract, they say, you know.
Well, yeah, but I recognize these people are completely non-attractive. At this stage in my life, you know, there's no reason to be repeating my adolescence ad nauseum.
Oh, I don't know.
About friendships. We sometimes have friendships out of loyalty to childhood, to our past.
I've got some friendships like that too. But
I do.
It may be inappropriate in terms of, you know, you're different people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I have one friend, a guy that I have known since second grade, and I love him dearly. He and his wife are both very close to me, but I look at them now, and it's like, if I met him today, I would not like a bit,
right,
you know?
Right.
So,
that's true. There's an awful lot of people that I've got relationships with now that there would be no way... And after I would ever connect with them.
And I mean, I can say that without fear of recrimination because I know he would say exactly the same thing about me.
Right.
You know, if he met me now, he would think I was a total airhead, you know. So, yeah.
Isn't it funny how life manages to bring us and hold us together no matter, you know, it's interesting. I wonder what...
So one of the things is that we're not necessarily seeing it, except symbolically. The transformations that may be taking place in Barbara and may be taking place in Sophia as they progress in this situation. Or for that, even Stacia. I mean, she's becoming more militant.
Yes.
Time goes on. You know, polarizing and as time goes on. It'll be interesting to see if we can be sensitive to, and also, are there changes in the archetypes that are taking place? You know, I mean, one of the interesting things, I know in the next chapter we're going to suddenly be in an art version of a psychedelic poster. You know, what was that, Magical Mystery Tour?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're going to have an artwork that's reminiscent of that. It's going to be in the next one. And the question is, do the archetypes change, or are they just sitting there sort of like window dressing, saying, well, you know, once you meet me, you know this, and they sort of stay within their own pattern?
Well, when you say archetypes, are you referring to the majors?
Not to the majors per se. I'm talking about, like, for instance, do they have any effect on, you know, the thrice great Hermes that we just had? I mean, well, but we should keep some of this in mind, because there is a return journey where a lot of these characters come in again, and some of them do change.
That is the most remarkable thing about Alan Moore's text, in my opinion, is what you've just said, the return journey. Where else is that ever addressed?
Right. It's like, we made it there, and ta-da, you know.
Yeah, it's like, right. So, yeah. So to me, this is just, it was like so amazing to me to find this series, and just, I don't know, it just fulfilled a need, I guess. It was right at the right moment.
Yeah. Usually that's how things happen. Have you noticed that?
If we pay attention.
If you pay attention.
To our part, too, you know.
If we pay attention, yeah.
Yeah.
So, is there anything else anybody wants to say about the spread or the...
I thought the spread was brilliant. I'm amazed. I think all the spreads have been amazingly accurate. And these are before the fact, in terms of the literary, you know, analysis of the story and the meaning. You know, I'm very impressed, but I still haven't bonded with the Tostek. I wish I could say I have, but I haven't.
And
are you using the Tostek when we do our spreads?
Oh yeah, but I still have that. Is anyone else like that, or am I the only one?
Well, I have to say, I did not relate to the Tostek at all, ever.
Okay.
And reading Promethea, it's just all of a sudden the deck. It's almost like it's in my face, saying, "Here it is," and
yep.
It's speaking to me loud and clear.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That
I've had
is
just
true.
The opposite. Yeah.
That is true. But I can't get past the Pips having words like oppression or you know, that to me
words bug you kind of, yeah.
Totally. Because
well, you can always clip them off.
You can.
Yeah, you can do it.
That's a
borderectomy.
Yeah,
but still, I think
for a client, it's very hard to see that.
Yes, exactly.
Very hard.
On the other hand, let me tell you an experience I had at the Reader's Studio this year that was just pretty weird. I took my top deck with me.
Wow.
And I used it for my daily draws, you know, just a single card draw.
Mm-hmm.
The first day of the official Reader's Studio, I was there a couple days early, but the first day I drew the Eight of Pentacles, which is prudence, is the key word on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the first person I talked to when I went downstairs was Prudence Terrio.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, cool, you know. So I don't know, the key words kind of have worked for me on a very prosaic level, you know.
Well, I think it was the deck and you having a joke together.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. Well, I mean, and Prudence and I did end up exchanging our foundation readings.
Mm.
And both of us had incredible, incredible foundation readings for each other. So I think that there was more than a joke there. I think it was, this is who you need to be working with.
Well, without telling anything out of court, what was your experience of the before and after foundation reading? In other words, you had the first version and the
second version was richer. And I would say that would be true for both of us. I think the first version of the foundation reading was very accurate, both of them. But the second version, using especially one of the things that both of us used in the second version was the whole body language, you know, where you're facing kind of things that Bob Place had given to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that really added a richness and a depth to our follow-up readings.
Using the Tostek, you were able to do that?
Yes.
Sure.
With positions? With the pips in one?
Well, with the pips, not so much, but with the four cards, with the majors, yes, absolutely.
All right. Of course. All right.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even sometimes in the pips cards in the top deck, there is a directionality to it. They're very ordered. They're very patterned. But once in a while, well, I mean, for instance, in that Eight of Cups that we were just looking at.
Right.
Only four of the cups are flowing.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the cups have a broken handle on one side or the other, you know, so that gives a direction.
Right.
Yeah, there's always...
And there may be a pattern that we're not seeing with the broken handles or, you know, leave it to a magician to put in a code.
Yeah. If nothing else, it makes you want, or makes me at least, want to look deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that is interesting because, of course, many have lined up the Marseille pips to create pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And
whether
what you're saying
there.
Perhaps there's a way of doing that with the Toth, although I've never seen it done.
And you're right, Johanna. Carly may have built in a code, but I think each of us can discover our own code, too, to a certain extent, whether it coincides exactly with what the artist intended or whether it's just something we discover on our own.
Well, who do you think was the artist, Crowley or Freda Harris?
Well,
I'm inclined to think Freda Harris.
Freda Harris, yes, but I would think that Crowley...
He dictated a great deal.
Knowing Crowley as I do was pretty dictated.
There's about three versions of some cards out there.
Like the main
well, we do know that for the
trickster. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know about the other cards. They were lost during World War II?
But I could just really imagine the two of them together, she producing something and he nitpicking and niggling and saying, no, this isn't what I wanted. You need to go back and do this and blah, blah, blah. But I often wonder, too, if she didn't sneak some things in on him a little bit.
Well, I think that she just had to get where he was coming from.
Yeah.
And sometimes, this happens all the time when you're doing artwork.
I'm sure.
Yeah. That he knew he wanted her as the artist, definitely. And he wasn't going to take anyone else.
Right.
And she was as much of a magician as he was within the group.
Yeah.
Right.
So
that's why I say, I wonder if maybe she didn't sneak a little of her own.
Yeah, I'm sure she
whether
did.
He realized it or not.
Oh,
you know?
As long as he said, I like it, you know, and then
I think it gave her a lot more range than what we suspect.
Mm-hmm.
But when you know, we also have to accept there's some things we'll never know. And perhaps that's one of them. It's very interesting that these collaborations are so puzzling, and yet Alan Moore has been so open about his collaborations with several artists.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, often, too, almost always, you have one person, you have another person, and when they come together, you actually have three people. Because you have the first person, the second person, and the third person that the two of them together
exactly.
form.
Exactly.
The art itself.
Yeah,
the universe they create together. Yes,
That's very true.
Oh, that's alchemy. Yes, that's the
that works not only for art, but it works for many other things.
Including
I remember reading in Truman Capote's In Cold Blood novel. Mm-hmm. He commented that the two men together, neither of them singly would have done what they did. But
right.
Every mother says
the third
that,
personality
though.
That did it.
Mm-hmm.
Every mother says that. Certainly, hopefully not in such grave an incident. But every mother will tell you. But if my kid gets together with another, it's a logarithmic problem as opposed to just that one kid by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble that they can get into.
True, but I do believe, even though every mother will say that, I think there's still a certain validity there.
Yes.
It's not just an excuse. I think that there really is a validity to the third entity being created.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I agree with you 100%.
Holly, I must depart, people. I have a reading soon, so I have to at least get some nourishment in me.
I want to throw in one little off the wall side here. I've been thinking a lot of tarot reading as a circus performance. But one of the things that we can see in a way is we can see this progression of the tree as a circus performance. In other words, each station, each sephira,
Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
That's the way. There is a deck that does illustrate that, Navigators of the Mystic
Sea. Yes.
That has very much that quality.
Mm. The strong aspect of the circus performance thing. So I just thought I'd bring that up. And thank you so much. I'm kind of glad we had a nice freewheeling discussion for a change.
Yeah.
And Choi. And Val, we're really happy.
Oh, thank you for being here. Yes.
Yeah.
And next week, I do plan to be here, but I am going to be visiting my son in Boston. So if something comes up that he ends up not working on Wednesday, I may not be on the call. But if I'm not here, don't think I've just gone flaky.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's always a possibility, but you know.
I'll tell you what day it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Bye, bye, people.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye, Johanna.
Okay.
Good week, everyone.
Yes.
Right.
Bye, bye.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye-bye.